up is another old friend of mine, one of our tech crew this evening. I would like to introduce all of you to an old friend, Bill Kopp.
Hi, everybody, like Jeff said, my name is Bill Kopp, and I'm a video producer by trade, which I always throw out because it sounds more impressive than it really is. But one nice thing about the job is it's requiring me to do a lot more traveling than I used to do before. And a lot of that is air travel. Now, as everybody knows, air travel's changed a lot over the past couple of years. Security delays, long lines, anal probes and stuff. But we're finally getting to the point where air travel is starting to get back to about where it was before. I mean, we're still walking around airports in our socks, but once you get used to that, it's kind of comfortable, actually. But I still haven't been able to recapture the feeling I had, the excitement I used to have about flying. Flying on a plane, was always used to love it, and I've never been able to get back. And I've traced that back to actually an event about 10 years ago. There was just one flight where I managed to become both completely enamored of and soured on air travel altogether. That's a pretty tall order for a single flight, and now that you mentioned it, I am prone to hyperbole, but I'm perfectly happy to live with that. So, moving on. Pam and I, my wife Pam and I, were on our honeymoon down in Jamaica. And we had a wonderful week. We did all the tourist things. We were staying at a little all-inclusive resort on the North Shore in Falmouth. And we climbed up Duns River Falls. We went rafting on some of the rivers, shopping at the local bazaars. My personal highlight, we checked out Dr. No's headquarters at Ocho Rios, of course. And the entire week was almost completely mugging free. All in all, a very, very nice week. So while we were there, we had made friends with a group of English newlyweds. That's like three individual married couples, not sort of an English polygamous experiment or whatever here. But, so we're all hanging out on the last evening there, and we decide things are a little slow. We're going to hit the resort's nightclub, which basically consisted of a DJ, a darkened room, and a couple of strobe lights. So it really wasn't that thing. But after the enormous quantities of rum we'd had, this place was Studio 54 as far as we were concerned, only without Andy Warhol. So we're all whooping it up. We're having a great time. And our friends, our new English friends, their flights all leave the following afternoon. So their last evening, they're leaving about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Our flight, however, leaves at 7:30 in the morning. So again, after an extraordinary amount of rum, we decide the best way to make sure that we can really get our flight is, you know, we can see this one coming, we're going to stay up all night long, okay? You know, that way we're sure, we're not going to bed, not a chance of anything going wrong. And this holds us for a while. We're having a good time until about 3 o'clock in the morning when, again, after even more rum, we're starting to feel the effects. The club's not really as exciting as we thought it was at first. And we said, okay, now our perfect plan. We're going to alter it a little bit. We'll go up to the room. We'll catch a quick nap, a couple of hours, you know, and then we'll wake up. We'll get packed, which, of course, naturally we hadn't started yet. We'll take a quick shower. We'll get out, we'll get down, we'll get a cab, we'll get to the airport, we can sleep on the plane. Beautiful, perfect, perfect plan. I don't know why we didn't think of it this way before. So we go back, and you can imagine my surprise when, after what only seemed like moments later, Pam sort of nudges me awake and says, Bill, what time did you set the alarm for? And I said, 5 o'clock, why? Is it supposed to be this bright at 5 o'clock in the morning? At which point, I shot bolt upright, or actually sort of like staggeringly rolled upright, okay, let's be honest, and saw the sun just streaming gleefully in through the window, a beautiful Jamaican morning, which of course, at the time, was the last thing we wanted to see. It was 6:40 in the morning. A quick check revealed the root of our problem, as I discovered, it's not really just enough to set the alarm. It also helps to actually turn it on. Our flight leaves in less than an hour. Our flight leaves from Montego Bay, about 15 miles down the road. And remember, we're not packed or anything. I don't know how we packed as fast as we did, but needless to say, my mother would not have been proud of me. We at least had the foresight to pack our multiple bottles of liquor toward the inside of the luggage so as not to really break it all. We somehow managed to lug everything down to the lobby. We had them call for a cab, enduring a whole lot of why didn't you ask for a wake-up call suggestions? But that didn't fit in with the plan, that perfect plan, remember. We had it all taken care of. Now, Jamaican drivers have a reputation for playing a little loose with the traffic laws. Now, I'm always willing to try to challenge my own stereotypes, my preconceptions, see myself proven wrong, really evaluate each situation individually. Thankfully, this was not one of those times. We covered the ground from the hotel to the airport in what I can only assume was relativity-altering time. We had a very helpful cab driver. He was great. He was telling us which entrance was going to be closest to the counters, exactly which line we needed to get into the airport, exactly who we needed to talk to. I probably would have been happier if he'd actually been looking at the road while telling us some of this stuff. But you know, who am I to split hairs, okay? So we get there, we get to the airport, we get out. The cab driver actually goes, parks his car, and comes back in to check to make sure that we're okay, which I thought was really nice. Being a little fuzzy on the exchange rate, I think I tipped him like $200 or something like this, but I can't quite be sure. I'd like to say we made it in time to catch our flight, but that would be a lie. I'd still like to say it, but it would be a total lie. We weren't actually that much later, but since there was very little chance they were going to tell the plane to turn around and come back and pick us up, it might as well have been the next day for all the good it did us. So not that the people at American Airlines weren't helpful, quite the contrary. They were all like, sure, okay, we'll figure out something to do, and they were pretty sure. There was another flight leaving in just about an hour, and they were pretty sure they could get us on it. At this stage, they weren't going to commit to that. Figured better to pawn that responsibility off on someone else. But if we went to the gate and checked, then they would see what they could do. And so we're still in mad scramble mode. The adrenaline rush really keeping us going. We're like, okay, let's go. We'll go to the gate. We get to the gate. They're checking up. And sure enough, they're going to be able to get us on the flight. Now, the seats aren't together, but they're going to be able to get us on the flight. And so we're like, we're going home. At this point, there's nothing else we can do. Our job is done. Mission accomplished. We've done everything we can. All we can do now is wait. And our adrenaline rush starts to come down a little bit. We start to calm down a little bit. Body metabolism starts remembering all the rum that we'd had before. And that combined with adrenaline sort of tends to mess up your system. And Pam started crying. I mean, outright sobbing. And it's not that she was particularly traumatized or even really all that upset. It's just she's crashing after this mad rush here. But of course, the attendants, they're freaked out. They're like, oh, no. They gather, it's on our honeymoon. I'm like, oh, no, please, calm down. It's okay. We'll make everything all right. It's all right. We'll be fine. Finally, she's like, let me see what I can do. So she goes back over to her computer, and she confers with somebody who I took to be her supervisor, and comes back and says, okay. We can get you two seats together. Now, you won't be able to have the meal, but the seats are in first class. Okay. Fine, thank you. And at this point, Pam's metabolism starts getting back to normal, recovering. So she stops crying. Coincidence on the timing here. But to these people, they are just ecstatic. They said the magic words that are going to help this poor, crying woman stranded in Montego Bay on her honeymoon. So they're just perfectly happy. So we get onto the plane, and oh, these seats are comfortable. These are the big, plush leather seats. There's plenty of leg room, butt room. I mean, if I wish I had this chair in my house, I would never leave the house. That's how comfortable this thing is. And so we're relaxing in there, and the steward comes up to us and says, can you get us anything? Orange juice, Bloody Mary, champagne. And we're very quick to tell him, we're not really first-class people, okay? We're only here because these were the only seats they could get together. Because, you know, at this point, we still figured it wasn't too late for them to change their minds. Pshaw! I don't think he actually said pshaw, but that's how I remember it anyway. Pshaw! The meals are already here. They're already prepared. If you don't eat them, they're just going to go to waste. Okay. So they bring out the breakfast on real plates, not the little plastic trays or anything. And so we're thinking, this is nice. I could get used to this. Now, the bacon and eggs weren't anything really to write home about, but it's better than nothing we would have been eating back in coach. And so we're eating our meals, and after a while, the steward comes over to us, and he brings out a map of Miami Airport. And he says, okay, now here's what you're going to have to do. We're going to get through customs. We're going to want to go to the line on the far right side. Don't go to the closer lines. Everybody goes to these lines, but they're going to take you longer. You're going to be waiting much longer. Go to the far side. It's reserved for U.S. citizens only. Just show them your ID. You'll be right through there. Here are your forms. Now, here, let me help you fill these out. He's helping us fill out these forms. And then he says, now, I can't go through customs with you. That's against the rules and stuff. But I'll meet you on the other side of customs, and I'll take you to your connecting flight myself. We were originally had a 3-hour layover in Miami, so there was still a chance we were going to make our connecting flight back the rest of the way. And so part of me thinks, I want to remind him again that, remember, we're not first class people. And then I said, what could that possibly accomplish? He wants to help us. This is his job. This is what gives him joy. Who am I to deny him that? So sure enough, we get there. We're the first ones off the plane. We're going through the airport. We go right to the far side of the line. We go right through, breeze right through customs. He's waiting right there for us. This is me. And he's guiding us right through the airport. We're zipping along, going through this. And I think there's a reason why they abbreviate Miami Airport MIA. If he had not been guiding us, we would have been lost. I guarantee that. There's no way we could have made it. But no, he's taking us through side routes and stuff like this. He knows this thing cold. He says, I called ahead. They're holding your plane for you. Okay. Takes us right to the gate. He says, I don't think your luggage is going to make it, but it's going to come on the next flight. We're going to make sure that it gets through there. You just call ahead and you can pick it up at the airport when you get back the next day. That's fine. Okay, we screwed up this much. I'm certainly not going to hold that against him. He gets us to the gate, and the attendant there's a little frazzled looking. Of course, it's his flight that's had to be held up. But he's still smiling. He's still happy. Steward says, thank you very much. Thank you for flying American Airlines. Very happy to serve you. And so a quick thank you, goodbye, and we're on the next flight. In coach. Now, there wasn't anything about that particular flight that was any worse than any flight I'd done before. Hell, before the last flight, I would have said it was top-notch, A1, just perfect, beautiful. But now, all I can think about is how cramped it is, how uncomfortable it is, how the damn bag of peanuts is a far sight less impressive than bacon and eggs on actual plates. Now, you'd think that with time, that this feeling, this general angst about flying would dissipate, but no. Every time I get on a flight now, I get on and I can't help thinking, first class. And I cringe a little bit. Even flying Midwest Express, and at least they've got cookies and bratwurst, okay? You know, the one thing I learned was, once you've tasted how the other half lives, it's damn hard to go back to sitting with the riffraff. Even if, you know, to be perfectly honest, you're one of them. Thank you very much.